psychedelics give you homework. So it's how can you take that homework, take the insights that you've had from the experience, and then actually integrate it into your sober waking life where you're actually changing behaviors, habits, and thought patterns.
Before we dive in, I want to share something with you. Now, these are brands I actually use in my own life. They aren't sponsors yet, but I believe in what they represent. If you're the kind of person who listens to T-Pow Labs or The Picture of Wealth, chances are you're already dialed into a few of these. But in case you're not, I have a few creative brand mentions. InvestMed. We talk a lot about smart investing here. InvestMed is one of those companies that thinks long-term, exactly the kind of mindset we want to explore on this show. Now, InvestMed is a private medical or executive physical company. Now, I will leave it at that, but look into it.
So I went to Thailand long time ago, and there would always be guys showing up and then training for a month, and then they would fight in a bar or like in a pub. Is this why you train for Muay Thai?
Not at all. So Muay Thai for me, it's a big discipline and respect. And for me, it's the best biohack I've ever done in my entire life. Like the coordination and the brain training in it is just insane for me. So like in terms of different drills, combinations and everything like that, the footwork, combining the footwork with the handwork and the kicking. Yeah, so it's been about a year and a half now. So train at Pacific Top Team. So Adolfo was the Mexican world champion kickboxer. So IFK world champion. So just to get access to him for a few hours a week, man, and get the downloads, it's been unreal. And the big thing for me is just, yeah, I mentioned the respect aspect, but like sparring with your friends, things like that. It's not about winning or the big ego thing. It's really meeting that with respect and being humble.
No kidding. Well, did you take martial arts before? Or is this...
So when I was younger, I did a little bit of karate, Dustin, but it was really with the gym, not getting bored in there. But I was like, okay, what else can I use to test myself? So in the winter times, I do a lot of backcountry snowboarding. And so that's the big where I get my rocks off. And then summertime, it's usually paddleboarding and stuff. So I was like, okay, what's something else I can do year round that gives me that adrenaline rush for sure?
Yeah, no, maybe I thought you watched the Conor McGregor documentary and then you were...
Yeah, might have had something to do with it. Yeah.
So we're going to talk about ketamine, psilocybin. We're going to talk about your sort of journey to get here, but I think you should fill us in. I don't think I'll put a big bio intro in the thing so people can look you up, but I don't want to take the time. We have not a huge time slot, and so I want to maximize it. When people think of psilocybin and maybe ketamine, those are illegal things. How do you have a business and how does it help people? And so I think that's what I would love for you to, I'm fascinated by it. So I'd love maybe go there and then we'll just see where it leads.
Cool. So yeah, we're an integrated health care company. So we focus on mental health and chronic pain treatments. So on the mental health side, what we've done is developed our own brand. We call it Odyssey Therapeutic Experiences. So yeah, we actually use psychedelics as a catalyst for our experiences. So I think one of the big misconceptions is people are like, there's no legal psychedelics in Canada. Whereas when we look at it, we actually specialize with intramuscular ketamine right now. So the doses we're giving the ketamine at create this big dissociative psychedelic experience. And then you just need a referral from a doctor to come in and have treatment. So we service everyone from PTSD, anxiety, depression, burnout, OCD, postpartum non-breastfeeding. So there's a pretty wide spectrum there. So how we legally give psilocybin and MDMA in the clinic is actually through the special access program. So we do an application with Health Canada, but it's reserved for people that have end-of-life distress, severe PTSD, or severe treatment-resistant depression. So we need to have the drug from a dealer's licensed Health Canada facility. So now in Canada, there is multiple drug manufacturers who specialize in psychedelics, and they are approved by Health Canada. So what we hope to see in the next 1 to 2 years, Dustin, is psilocybin and MDMA will become available like ketamine is through a referral.
Again, is this similar to the marijuana industry back in the day?
There is some parallels, Dustin. So the big terms that I've learned is, so cannabis was a recreational dispensary model. So you go in and you buy liquor, whereas this will be a prescription medical model. So for cannabis, you don't need a prescription or anything like that. Mm. Whereas for this, you'll have that referral from a physician, and then the actual treatment itself will be fulfilled under supervision by medical professionals in a clinic like ours.
Yeah, that's, well, again, from a novice, newbie, experimenter, of everything. I think this is a lot more fascinating to know that there's this treatment, there's using these things might be scary for some people. And to know that there's a nurse sitting right there to help you through the journey, and it's structured, conveniently located in the middle of town. Mm-hmm. So do you see any sort of other countries that had this model and then evolved to it being more recreation, or is it pretty much medical grade?
So, I mean, when you look at countries like Jamaica, they have legalized psilocybin, so you can just buy it. Now, on a state-by-state basis in the US, there is some states where it's been decriminalized, whereas others are using this medical clinical framework. So the big thing I'm starting to learn, Dustin, too, is the insurance and benefit side. So the way I start to think about this is you have underground market and legal medical clinical market. So much like there was in cannabis. So don't get me wrong, I have sat with some incredible underground facilitators, whether it's been ayahuasca or 5-MeO-DMT. But the thing you almost mentioned, you hit the nail on the head, is where people who are maybe psychedelically naive, they're looking at the Western medical system. They're just used to someone with a lab coat, letters and numbers behind their name, the doctor, the nurse, the therapist. And that's actually the model that insurance and benefits are going to cover. Insurance and benefits won't be covering Timmy, who's done 3 ayahuasca experiences and thinks he's a shaman and he's come to my basement. And again, that for me, consciousness expansion is more what people I think are seeking in the underground. They're maybe pretty well adjusted. They might have some trauma, but they're really looking at it as exploration of spirit. Whereas in the medical clinical world, I think it's definitely a lot more dictated to trauma or people that have those severe mental health conditions, or they're looking at it potentially as a brain optimization, but they're looking at it to be within that Western medical container.
Can you paint a picture? So again, in theory, you've got patients who have gone through this, and you have, and it's been running for how long has it been running? Give us a
context. We had our 3-year anniversary of treating patients on April 1st this year.
Yeah, that's exciting. Congratulations. So what do they report back as? I know that there could be pain decrease, it could be headache decrease. There's kind of like the chronic stuff, but I'm kind of like interested in the juicy shit. What do they report back? Pick whatever treatment you want, most common or the most hardcore. Mm-hmm. What do they report? What am I feeling?
So great question. So I think one of the nuanced things with intramuscular ketamine is we have a lot of people that are like, ketamine isn't a classical psychedelic. So the interesting thing is your classical psychedelics work on your serotonin system. Ketamine works on your glutamate system. So glutamate is one of your main neurotransmitters. So typically if you have chronic pain, chronic stress, you're burnt out, depression, anxiety, your brain has lower glutamate levels. So in the ketamine experience, you get this huge glutamate surge in your brain, which is what's increasing the neuroplasticity. So the interesting thing for me, Dustin, is most of my work has been with psilocybin, ayahuasca, 5-MeO-DMT. So when we first started the intramuscular ketamine treatments, I was like, okay, man, like, what is this intramuscular ketamine experience? I need to check this out. So for me, Dustin, it's been kind of one of the most profound psychedelic experiences I've had, because the interesting thing with ketamine is it's a dissociative anesthetic. So you completely lose your body and you lose all awareness of the room, your body, surroundings, and you're almost blasted off into, I just call it this like astral mindscape. So it's like incredibly visual. You can see it's almost like a movie theater of things, whether it's from your life, past lives. And so I've had some pretty interesting experiences in there. And the interesting thing I'd say is more with something like psilocybin or ayahuasca, there's almost like this spirit to it where there's this intelligence where you're communicating with something. So in my own personal experiences or patients we've had in the clinic, with that psilocybin, there is that intelligence that's maybe showing you things, teaching you things. Whereas with ketamine, it's more you, yourself, and I in the universe. It's a much more kind of agnostic experience.
So I'm familiar with the universe, prescribe to it and study it, believe in it, all that kind of stuff. So for someone who isn't quite as nerdy in the topic or nerdy in the subject matter area, like in touch with the universe, what can you try to connect that for somebody like that is, what the fuck is this guy talking about?
Yeah. So I think, well, the thing I've learned over my life, Dustin, is I like to use the term spirit. So I think fundamentally a lot of where mental health problems come from, there's a disconnection with yourself, spirit, or your community and the people around you. And I think it's that disconnection that is causing so much harm in our society right now. So the older I've gotten, the more I've worked on my spiritual practices or some of these experiences, is I'm getting this direct communication with spirit. And I'm trying to embody that in my daily life. And I think that's one of the things that the clinic we try not to do, is we're very kind of like agnostic. But as people start to have these psychedelic experiences where the conscious mind moves out the way, they start to have some of these mystical experiences, quote unquote. So in our integration therapy, they're actually coming to us and saying, I have this experience with God, or I have this experience with an entity or a dead loved one. What is going on here? And I think that's the thing, is in our Western society, we've become so focused on the 3D physical world that we forget that life is potentially multidimensional in nature, and we can start to access these higher states of consciousness and start to tap into that spirit or God word.
Yeah. So for all the people that are like saying, okay, you guys are talking like real high level, and I know you've done research. I know that there's lots of research in the peers that you have around company, but I guess I understand you handle pain, but I'm more curious about betterment, wellness, optimization. We're also curious that if we do something, if I take this vitamin E or I take these peptides or do this, that I'm going to be better. But we don't know that. But there's this feeling inside that you just, it's like, I don't have to justify why I want something. And so I'm trying not to lead you too much, but give us the next sort of layer of what people give you feedback of, where those breakthroughs come from, or what those breakthroughs look like after 1, 2, 3 treatments. And second part of the question is like, how many treatments are people doing it all the time? Or is it like you only have to do it once?
So great question. So I'll maybe start at the end there, Dustin. So in terms of number of treatments, depending on the severity of the condition, so if someone has severe treatment-resistant depression, sometimes what we'll see is them doing maybe a series of 2 to 4 treatments up front in a shorter period. And then we'll maybe see them once or twice a year after that. We do also have clients in the clinic where they are more geared towards, hey, I'm a high-performing executive and I suffer from burnout. So we're starting to see them maybe once a quarter, once every 2 months, and they're just using this as part of their performance management or wellness routine. So the big thing where I think this really comes into play for someone like yourself, Dustin, when you're a high performer, is you can take all the supplements you want and do all the biohacking you want. But the main thing I've learned as I've got older, and what we're finding in the clinic, is, have you ever read the book, The Body Keeps the Score?
No.
Okay, so fascinating book. So the way we start to look at this, Dustin, is your body is a bioenergetic machine. So over your lifespan, whether it's from childhoods, relationships, business, any sort of trauma, it has a certain vibrational frequency to it, or energy to it. And your body is essentially storing those events in the cells of your body. So I think the beautiful thing with these experiences, when you start to look at it as a biohack or an optimizer, is when you're actually getting your conscious mind out of the way, you're opening up the energy system in your body, and you're allowing this energy to process, or this stuck trauma. And I think that's where the real gold of these treatments lies, is you can do all the cognitive therapy you want, all the biohacking you want, but if you aren't actually getting in touch with your emotions and the deep underlying energy that's running your body, you're going to be stuck at a certain point. And it's actually once you start to shift those energy patterns within yourself, that's where the external world starts to change around you.
Fraser, are you, and you can tell me to beat it if you're not comfortable with this, are you comfortable sharing something that for you was like a breakthrough, where like in the past you thought was smart, and after doing it, you think now it's, that was dumb and it was sort of a blocker? Is there an example story?
So for me, so one of the things, so I guess that's why we've set up the clinic the way we have done it. I've done a lot of like cowboy exploration with psychedelics and got myself into choppy waters and being like, oh, I should not do that one again. So that's what's really helped on. Us.
What does choppy waters look like? Is this ayahuasca barfing and like just like that? Or is that what you're talking about? Or mentally?
Yeah, some ayahuasca, like some really challenging ayahuasca experiences. But the cool thing with that is the container. But then for me, when I was in my early 20s and first exploring, I would be in the backcountry and have 5 grams of mushrooms by myself in the backcountry.
Right.
And it was there where I was like, oh, this is maybe not the safest setting to do this, because when reality starts to get a little slippy, that's when you realize the safe container is so important. And the one thing I've learned, Dustin, is it's the nervous system. So if we can actually get into our parasympathetic nervous system with these experiences and the nervous system is calm, that's when we allow the inner world to start to unfold. So really what we try to do is deprive the senses. So eye shades, headphones, weighted blanket, safe container, because when the nervous system starts to relax, that's when the internal world unfolds. Whereas if you're out recreationally at a party, you're out in nature, don't get me wrong, nature can be beautiful, but when your eyes are open, you're still taking in the environment. Am I safe? Processing danger? What's going on? Even if you're talking with a friend, you're still keeping your egoic mind at the forefront. Whereas when you actually start to deprive the senses, that's where some of these big therapeutic transformations happen.
Okay, so you evaded the question once, so I'll try it one more time. Is there something that is safe to share that is, again, something you thought that was a blocker and now is not?
So, I mean, the big thing, Dustin, so I mean, one of the big transformational things for me is I had a pretty traumatic breakup 3 years ago now. So I was married for 12 years and my life kind of crumbled with that, and going to cognitive therapy, the therapist said something very interesting to me. They were like, Fraser, you think about your feelings, you don't feel your feelings. So I always thought like I was so good at managing my emotions and thinking my way through things and problem solving. But it was actually a therapeutic MDMA session for me that completely removed how I was thinking about this situation. And I actually started to feel the other person of what they were thinking and what they were feeling and how I was showing up in their world. And I thought I was innocent in the whole thing, but it was really interesting getting that drop in and being in their shoes. And it was such a cathartic experience for me to actually reflect on myself, reflect on the relationship. And it was a big thing of personal growth for me where I really saw how I was showing up in that relationship too. And yeah, so I think that's one of these biggest things, that we can have such our own ingrained cognitive bias that diving into some of these experiences and removing that bias, it can really help us see the world in a different way, see our relationships in a different way, and potentially see how we're showing up in the world too.
Yeah, thank you for that. That was, listeners, that was a gift. So thank you, Fraser, for sharing that. Is there any more along the lines of PG life hacks versus psilocybin and MDMA sort of treatment that you've done in the last 3 years that have also moved the bar forward in the next chapter and being excited, moving from sort of sadness, angry,
yeah,
the trough to excited?
So I think there's some things how I look at this, Dustin, in my life is I have external biohacks and internal biohacks. And so maybe to start off on the external, first of all, for me is peptides have been such a huge thing in my life. I've had 3 shoulder reconstructions from trying to play pro rugby, and it was BCP157 and TB500 completely changed my life. Just in terms of joint pain, blood flow, performance, endurance, it was been a wonderful one. Red light every morning for sure. And then have you ever heard of a chi machine, Dustin?
A chi machine, no. Nope.
Yeah, so dude, this has been one of the best biohacks I've ever bought. So you kind of put your legs in this thing and it basically swishes you like a fish. So it flushes your lymphatic system and then it actually gets your chi flowing in your body. So yeah, from the external to the internal. So one of the best things I've learned over the last 2 years is a practice called Nigong. So it's Neigong. So okay. Nigong is the umbrella to things like Tai Chi, Qigong. So our master calls it the process of internal transformation. So Dustin, one of the things for me is I always like to do like, what can I do here? What can I fix? For Nigong, there's a lot of standing postures where you're just doing nothing. And that was one of the hardest things for me to get to grips with. So with these standing postures, you're doing things like reverse breathing. So you're learning some different breathing techniques, some different movements. And it's essentially teaching you how to circulate your chi and grow your chi, which is your life force. So that's been one of the best internal things, because I've started to say, okay, well, it's great doing all of these external things, but how can I start to produce this change internally myself? Because I'm realizing the body and the mind are so powerful. And I think that's one of even the things with psychedelics is it's amazing to have these consciousness expanding experiences, but then how through things like breathwork, mantra, prayer, how am I starting to create that state of consciousness without something external?
That was also Very good. And I think the one thing you said when you're talking, I was thinking about decoupling, and I would share that I would be working on this myself, of decoupling how strong my body is and how strong my mind is in connection with how much money I have. So it's like how much money I have is obviously proves how smart I am, mm-hmm. and how just as a man, like out and powerful, yeah. when that is not the case. It's not because the money has gone away. It's just decoupling from that, because it gets to a point where it's like, well, this never ends. It never, money's kind of infinite. It's like, I'd have to make even more money to feel better about myself. And so there's this just stripping that.
Yeah. When I think that's the thing in our society, a lot of times men's self-worth is tied to how much money they have or make. And Dustin, that's even my own personal experience I've had, is even starting the business, putting all my money into it. It was a big lesson for me of that, of saying, well, like, maybe if I don't have a ton of cash right now, I'm still creating impact in the world. And I'm still creating that relationship with myself where I can feel worthy and whole without a big bank account. So, and that's the thing, is once you start to work on that internal world, or especially for me, the external world and your bank account starts to reflect that too. But I think that's the biggest thing, is if you're so focused on the lack of money and what I need to do to increase my bank balance, and when you're stuck on the lack, that's when you're just self-perpetuating that reality.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And I think you have a whole life of experience. You have all this data that you bring into your ethos, and you create biases based on experience. And it doesn't always mean that your thoughts are real. I can't remember who wrote that, but I didn't make that up. But it's very...
Yes, there's a very cool quote. So Eckhart Tolle, I read his book when I was like 16 years old. And one of the quotes that really stuck out for me, Dustin, was watch your thoughts, feel your emotions, observe the reaction. And that's the cycle, because the thought creates the emotion and the emotion creates the thought. But when you can start to witness that and step back from it, that's what's allowing you to break the loop and realize that all of your thoughts aren't real, or you don't need to believe or buy into everything your mind is thinking.
Well, I would wonder if there's a connection between the amount of social media that we consume and scroll. I'm not a big scroller, but I go through waves of classifieds. And so you're like, get ping in your brain kind of just, and then right now I'm really queued up on stocks and crypto. And so that's, you know, just kind of that thing where, and it comes time to make a decision, you've been kind of hit with all these things that, well, how can I even make a decision? So then you just don't make a decision, and it makes it hard to know. And now that the next layer is, I had a great conversation at the soccer field the other day, Gene, thank you. I know you're listening, about kids and ChatGPT. So I am using it, it's up on the screen right now, and I'm constantly using it. Now, could you use it as a child for certain things? And again, writing emails or prepare a letter of cover letter for resume, that's one thing. But asking it and becoming sort of friends with it and asking it how you should think, where's the line? So again, that wasn't a segue, that was a tangent. But I will make it a segue. In your business, are you harvesting any of the data that either the experiences that people are having or the stats on if this is actually working? Is the government asking you for any sort of that in to make the process or procedure or experience better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Dustin, we always look at it, especially in an emerging industry, data is so crucial, because I think the data is what's helping us change the stigma in the healthcare system. So a couple high level points for you. So after one treatment, our largest reduction in anxiety has been 95%. Our largest reduction in depression has been 70%, and our largest improvement in quality of life has been 100%. So we collect some baseline metrics before treatment, after treatment, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. And so that's really one of the big things for us, is just using the data to showcase, hey, this works, and then comparing that data against traditional SSRIs or antidepressants. So when you look at it from things like whether it's WorkSafe BC, Veterans Affairs, Canadian government, so when you actually look at antidepressants, when you look at the time of treatment effect, like efficacy, sometimes they're over 24 months if they're effective at all. When you look at our form of therapy, we've got people back to work in 2 months and 3 treatments. So you're really starting to see the time scale of how effective these treatments are and how quickly they can be. Whereas if you're looking at antidepressants, it's almost 6 months for that chemistry brain change to happen. And then people are just starting to numb out. So they're not actually feeling or getting to the root cause of any of these problems, of their emotional turbulence. It's just taking this thing and numbing out.
Yeah, so that's kind of where my head was like. So then I'm glad you brought this up. So someone says they're depressed. And so I guess you have like, when I think of depressed in my head, it's hunkered in, barricaded in your room, don't leave, don't eat. That's what I think of. But then there's sort of like closet depressed, which is maybe you know the stats. So then someone identifies, gets that figured out, and they're going to take some drugs. So they take the drugs from the doctor that's been prescribed, and I'm talking about big pharma sort of thing. And what is the measurement? There's no blood pressure thing that goes on your thing to measure. Are you not depressed? Are you depressed? So two question is like, how does the existing system work? And then how are you quantifying other than just the person going, oh, I went out of the house today. I must not be depressed. That's a 95% increase.
Yeah, so great question. So traditional medical world, so a PHQ-9 is a standardized scale for depression. So it's kind of people will fill out a bunch of questions and it spits out their PHQ-9 score. GAD-7 is anxiety. You have QIDS score, which is your quality of life, PCL-5, which is PTSD, and then you have a childhood adverse events scale. So a lot of the times if someone's going to a GP and they're like, hey, I'm feeling depressed, they'll have them fill out these forms. And literally because the GP doesn't know any better or doesn't know about alternative treatments, we've talked to people in the clinic that are just like, their doctors literally looked at a list and being like, huh, try this one. And they've just prescribed an antidepressant. And then the person will maybe come back in 3 months and be like, nothing's really changed. And they'd be like, try this one. And it's literally just this thing of trying different pills and seeing what works. But that's been the big thing for us, Dustin, with the GP education aspect, is now educating GPs with what our treatment is, what the data is, so that when someone's sitting in front of them, because a lot of times now people don't want to do antidepressants. They're like, hey, you know, I'm really into natural healthcare. I'm really into my nutrition, but there's just this thing I can't get over. So for that GP to now be able to say, hey, okay, you don't want antidepressants? Here's ketamine therapy, or here's an Odyssey therapeutic experience. That's really where we see the big growth in this for sure.
And I assume, is this going in the States already? Like, are they ahead of us and other countries are ahead of us, right?
It's interesting, Dustin. So my business partner, who's the physician, actually calls the US model treat and street. So you can literally walk into a clinic in LA and get an IV of ketamine, and then you're out the door after treatment. No therapy, no support, no anything. So the big thing with we see the Canadian medical system is that therapeutic model or therapeutic framework. So with our clinic, we always have preparation and integration therapy. We have our app where the person gets access to educational resources and other mindfulness modalities. So breathwork, meditation, yoga, somatic techniques, because we believe that the psychedelic experience is a catalyst, but you know, it's almost that idea of teaching man how to fish rather than giving them a fish. So if we can actually teach these people how to regulate their own nervous system with mindfulness practices, when they have this kind of opening with the psychedelic experience and they have these mindfulness practices they can do in their daily life to build on the therapeutic window of treatment, that's really where we're seeing these synergistic transformations in their mental health. It's not just looking at the psychedelic experience as another drug, because that's what we don't want to see, is people just go up, they come down, they go up, they come down, they go up, they come down, but nothing actually changes. Psychedelics give you homework. So it's how can you take that homework, take the insights that you've had from the experience, and then actually integrate it into your sober waking life where you're actually changing behaviors, habits, and thought patterns.
Yeah, I'm just sitting with that for a sec. So thank you for that. I think before we close off, I think we should just sort of round out. So when someone comes into the clinic, again, this is in downtown Kelowna, nice building, a nice, safe setting. I won't steal it from you. Set me up. I'm a patient coming in. What does that finish kind of what you've been just talking about of the start to finish journey?
Beautiful. So with every client, Dustin, first time through, we have them do a mental health and a physical consult. So this is kind of the discovery phase of treatment. So they get lifetime access to our app at that point as well. So with the consults, it's really reviewing what you've tried in your mental health journey, what's worked, what hasn't worked, what are your treatment goals, what's your intention for treatment. And then with the physical consult, really looking at full medication review, blood pressure, everything like that, to make sure you are safe and suitable for treatment. We then have preparation therapy. So we always use psychedelically trained therapists who specialize in this form of therapy. So they can give you some really good tips and tricks to help you get ready emotionally, physically, and mentally for the actual experience itself. For the experience, so we do everything else virtually apart from the actual experience itself. So you come into the clinic for the experience and eye shades, headphones, weighted blanket. You have oversight from a physician and a nurse there, and our nurses are all trained as psychedelic facilitators. And so can really help create that safe environment to allow that nervous system to relax and you to go deep in that internal journey. And then 48 hours after treatment, you have your integration therapy. So really helping you to unpack any emotions that came up and really harness the insights from that treatment of going forward. And then we've actually just released sublingual ketamine as well. So most of what we see, Dustin, is the intramuscular experience is the most kind of profound and intense. But then sublingual experiences comes in at a lower price point where it's actually a ketamine lozenger you have. So it's almost more of that like microdose experience. You do still get that boost in neuroplasticity and glutamate, but you know, easier price point for people and a much less intense experience, especially if they are new to psychedelics.
Thank you. I just had a flash thought. So let's say it's kind of a combo. I wasn't going to go here, but I go here. So let's say I take some psilocybin or take some ketamine, and instead of doing the eye shades, I'm at my microphone and record like what I'm seeing. Would you recommend that, or would it not be the proper experience because I would have too much stimulus from either like my monitors or the view or like, that's just my thought.
The one thing, Dustin, I've learned is hold everything with an open palm. So yes, and. So it would definitely make a great podcast. So don't get me wrong. I have had very profound experiences out in nature with friends. Profound, weird, amazing conversations, downloads, insights. So yeah, I always say it's there's something for everyone. Some people love those recreational nature experiences and they were like, oh my God, I would never do psychedelics with an eye shade on. It would just freak me out. But it was actually, Dustin, the big thing for me is I did 3.5 grams of mushrooms in a float tank. And I was in there for 4 hours and it was one of the best experiences I've ever had. And that's really what taught me, it's the internal journeys where you're mining a lot of the gold from these things. And one of the best expressions I heard from Dr. Zach Walsh was, where there's dragons, there's treasure. And that's the big thing for me, is where that fear is of depriving the senses and allowing just the inner world to unfold. Because a lot of people are like, do you not get bored? And I'm like time goes like that. And that's been one of my experiences, is psychedelics can be very visual with eyes open, but when the eyes are closed, the visual experience you start to have is pretty wild.
I know the listener is thinking this, so I'm just going to ask it, is when someone comes in or in your 3 years, if you've had someone who hasn't had a good experience, So everything goes good, there's some post homework, some therapy, great, my pain's less, I got no PTSD, got no anxiety, they're a full functioning. Then you have the spectrum of the ultimate performer. They're doing it and unlocking all this stuff. What about for the person that doesn't have a good trip? And not maybe don't talk about the exact story that it was, but is there a common thing you've identified in, I'll just leave it there. And then you answer.
For sure. So Dustin, and I think this is one of the beautiful things now being operating for 3 years, is we have learned so much about the screening process and the preparation process. So, you know, I would say in the last year and a half, we haven't had any like adverse events, quote unquote, because we've learned the better you can screen people and the better you prepare them, the easier and the smoother that actual experience becomes. But back in the beginning, Dustin, I'd say we've definitely had some screamers in the clinic. So whether that's just been severe PTSD, when you get a chance to maybe, I wouldn't say relive, but revisit potentially that traumatic event, it can be a very visceral experience of processing the emotions and the thoughts around that traumatic event. And that can come out in some weird ways in the psychedelic experience. But again, I think that is the thing about having the safe container of having skilled psychedelic facilitators and physicians there to be able to help you work through that and manage that. Because if you were out recreationally and then this traumatic event came up for you and you're starting to process that emotion and your friends aren't trained in that, you're maybe out in public and then you're starting to have the whole thing of, oh my God, I'm creating a scene here as well. But the big thing is, there's this. So in magic, Dustin, they have this thing called ritual is the husk of chaos. So when you can create the ritual or the container and it's safe, it allows the chaos to happen and unfold and the energy to process. And that's essentially what you're doing with psychedelics, is you're creating the container to allow any energy to process. And then once the energy is processed, the container relaxes, and that's where people have these therapeutic outcomes. But when there's no container to hold the chaotic energy that might be processing, that's where people start to have really bad trips.
Container. What do you mean by that? For me, simpleton.
So container is... So it comes back to set and setting. So what is the set and setting you're doing these molecules in? And what's your frame of mind as you're doing them too? So if you're just out with your buddies at the pub and it's, hey man, here's 3 grams of mushrooms, zero container. There's no intention. There's no preparation. There's no like, why am I actually doing this? What's my goal of this experience? So it's just this loosey-goosey thing. Whereas the container, what we say is that's why the preparation is so important. The therapy, what are you seeking here? What's your goal? What's your intention? Is there something specifically you're looking at digging up in the experience? And then the container. So we always say it's like a comfortable living room-like setting. Comfortable chairs, comfortable clothes. You have the nurse and the physician there to allow you to feel safe. And then it's really just creating that safe space for you to be able to process whatever needs to happen.
Fraser, any final thoughts or things you are extremely excited about in life in the space?
So I think, Dustin, for us, like the exciting part is just this coming into mainstream healthcare. So, I mean, I'm sure everyone's heard the Matthew Perry story from Friends.
I don't know it.
Matthew Perry from Friends basically overdosed in his hot tub on ketamine. So okay. The big thing came out that basically his physician and his assistant were basically buying huge quantities of ketamine, and he was doing self-supply at home. And so completely lost that therapeutic container, and it became a recreational drug experience. So I think that's the big thing for us, is that was actually a huge advantage for us to say, okay, well, this is why these medicines should be in this medical clinical framework, because it allows people to be safe and to actually get real results. It's not just another drug like opiates where you're taking it the whole time. And so it's been really cool to see just collective zeitgeist changing, where people are actually starting to look at this and being, oh my God, this is actually working. Or they've seen friends and family that have had these experiences. And it's starting to start that natural curiosity for people to say, okay, like I used to think this was so weird and out there, but maybe this is something I could actually seek for myself and see if there's some real change there.
Where do you access your information? Like, where do you stay up to speed in the space for someone who's like a late adopter in a trend and they want to do sort of some sniffing around before they call you?
So there's some amazing newsletters out there. So Psychedelic Insights is an awesome one. So it's just psychedelicinsights.com. You have MAPS is amazing. So just MAPS.org. And they have some really cool stuff on all clinical trials out there, data, legalization that's happening across the world. So yeah, MAPS and Psychedelic Insights, I'd say, are the best ones. And then as you mentioned, Justin, ChatGTP, I use it every day.
Well, thank you, Fraser. Where can people find your website?
So our flagship clinic is entheomed.ca, and then you can go to odysseymethod.com for everything on our therapy model, and then our Instagram channel is at entheomed as well.
Awesome, Fraser. Thanks for coming on the show today.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Dustin.